gives a f*** if you don't have enough money, nobody gives a f*** if you're hungry, nobody gives a f*** if you're tired. You're the only one that can fix that. Dude, this is all I f***ing have right now. Like, I gotta make this so I can make my f***ing wife's life better, so I can do what I want. Like, this is, I have to do this. 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 Rob Bailey!
All right, welcome to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil Mendoza, and our guest for the show, Andrew Munsell of Hamsky Archery. And tonight, we're going to start off with a special phone call coming in from our Train to Hunt fellow director, Matt Anderson, with some very cool news, and also to wish him luck in his upcoming Team CrossFit Regionals.
This weekend.
So, Matt, how are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling good. We've had a couple deload days and just ready to drive over to Seattle and get it started.
Hell yeah, brother. And we wish you luck on that. And one of the reasons I had you call in tonight is to announce some what I would consider pretty cool news. And I think some of the other Train to Hunt guys will find interesting. That I know Phil doesn't even know about this yet. But what are your plans for competing this year for Train to Hunt?
Well, I think I'm going to go team with Will Bradley.
Oh, boom. There it is. I told you this year teams are going to get serious. Going to be some serious competition. You now have an Anderson Bradley team going out there.
Hey, Matt, have you had your head checked lately?
Will's pretty persuasive. We'll say that.
Hey, man, congrats on qualifying for regionals. Good luck, man. We wish you all the best and safe weekend and healthy weekend and a top-performing weekend, man. We look forward to seeing how you guys do.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, if anyone wants to watch it, it's just on the game site. We're in the West Regional, and I'm on the CrossFit Coeur d'Alene team. And then I want to leave with one thing I just want to tell Tyler and Brock to move over, because we're coming for that number one spot.
It's a tough division, man. We got our work cut out for us.
I like it. I like it. Hey, man, good catching up for a second, Matt. We'll talk to you soon. And once again, good luck. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Later, brother. All right. And with that, let's get this show on the road.
When the sun rises, I wake up and chase my dreams. I won't regret when the sun sets, 'cause I live my life like I'm a beast. My dreams, I won't regret when the sun sets, 'cause I live my life like I'm a beast. I control my breath.
All right, everybody, we're back. We're ready to officially kick this thing off now. Talk a little bit of archery, talk a little bit of hunting, talk about what it's like to dominate the world of rest. And when I say rest, I don't mean sleeping in on Sunday. I'm talking the kind you put on your bow pole supports your arrow so you can get maximum speed and accuracy out of it.
That's right, Will.
So, Andrew, what's it like? What's it like being the top dogs? Or, well, if you don't consider yourself the top dog, maybe what's it like being considered by other people the epitome of high-performance rests in the bow hunting archery world?
Well, I got to say, it's quite flattering to see guys like Phil, top shooters across the country, and now we have top shooters across the world, winning very prestigious tournaments, taking some very prestigious animals in the field with one rest. So, you know, it's kind of like Sean and I talk all the time. It's like tying your own fly for the first time. And when you catch a fish with your own fly or your own fly rod, that's what makes it special. And then to see people actually, you know, it's one thing for you to feel like you got the best product out there. But when other people start believing in it, they see the difference it makes, and they start succeeding with it, and their scores improve, and their success in the field overall improves. That's what really gets us going.
Now, I don't know if Phil told you this, but when we were first talking about starting a podcast, he was like, "So who do you want on?" And I was like, "Andrew, that's who I want. We're gonna start this thing just so I can have Andrew on here."
Well, you need your head examined, because you had Snyder on a couple weeks ago, and that guy's a bomber too, man.
Oh yeah, man, he's an animal as well, shooting a hamsky. Is it hamsky or hamskay? I get that.
It's hamsky. An acronym. Yeah, it's an acronym.
What's the acronym for?
So the three founding fathers were Tim Gillingham. If folks know who Tim is, he's probably the one of the world's most successful and most rounded archer in the world, in my humbled opinion. He's won at target shoots, top level professional target shoots, spot shoots. He's won 3Ds. He's won field. He's won FIDA. I mean, he's won everything, basically, in every discipline. So Tim, it was Tim. Sean Greathouse, good friend of mine that I met here in Colorado when I moved here about 11 years ago. And then myself, we just kind of found ourselves going around circles and bumping into each other at tournaments and whatnot. And Sean and I competed here in northern Colorado regionally all the time together, bumping heads. And so we decided to form a company, and we were trying to figure out our name. And we all, three of us, have nicknames. Of course, Tim's nickname's the Hammer. My nickname goes way back. They call me Skeeter. And then we're trying to find a nickname for Sean. And the three of us were actually in 2008. We were up in Idaho elk hunting. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just up there elk hunting. And every time we'd say, well, where do you want to hunt today? Or where do you want to hunt this afternoon? Tim and I would look at the maps, and we'd get the strat plan going. And Sean, we'd look at Sean, and Sean would just say, well, I'm easy. Then, you know, day goes by. Well, let's jump into town and go eat. Where do you want to eat? Tim and I are trying to figure it out and look at Sean. He's like, well, I'm easy. So we just said, the hell with it. Your nickname's Easy. So if you take Hammer, Skeeter, and Easy, and you take the first couple, three letters of each of those nicknames, you get Hamsky.
Right, so you wanted to figure out a nickname that, you know, encompassed you all and was as hard to pronounce and read for everybody else.
Yeah, well, that's the way it turned out, and is, you know, you never know where a good name might turn up or what it might mean for you, but when you go Google Hamsky and you spell it correctly, we're the only ones that come up. So it's not, you know, it's kind of cool that way.
I spelled it wrong a couple times and got some Swedish people.
Yeah, I know. Did you spell it Hamski?
I think I have.
Yeah, watch out for that one. That has a different connotation. I'll just leave it at that. If any of the viewers want to go Google that, you might be surprised on what you get.
Right now, hundreds of computers are simultaneously firing up to Google that.
Yeah, the Google search engine is going, what the hell?
So, I got another very serious, poignant question. If this is, you know, too personal, too deep, and you don't want to go into it, you don't feel like you have to answer the question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And that is, what is your nickname for, as I call him, Phil the Iceman Mendoza? What is it, the nickname you have for him?
So if you can't tell, I'm all about nicknames because it actually, to me, brings a different level of relationship. And I don't mean that in a, relationship. So, you call your wife or your kids nicknames, generally speaking. So Phil, I don't know. I just look at this guy, and we actually went to a tournament where we were to go. It was about last year. Was it Alabama or was it London? Anyway, so, the guy's ripped. He's kicking everyone's butt in this train to hunt thing. And I'm just like, he's just the big sexy, That's just it. It's like New Orleans is called the Big Easy, right?
Yep.
Right? So he's just the big sexy. I mean, I just want to grow up and be just like Phil.
No, I've got to comment on that. So
yeah, please do.
Andrew likes to call me the big sexy, but we all know around these parts, Colorado, Northern Colorado, where anybody who's around these local archery events, we call Andrew number one because he is the number one big sexy, and I just try to be like Andrew. So if he's calling me big sexy, I think I'm doing okay. But that comes from Andrew. Don't let him fool you. That's everybody around here knows Andrew is number one. So, but anyway, moving on, Will. No more big sexy comments.
Hey, big sexy, whatever you want. We'll move on. I think that one could stick. Forget the Iceman. That's too intimidating. He sounds unbeatable. Big sexy, well, he doesn't sound like he does much working out. He just is. So, moving on from that, where did you guys, I'm assuming you just didn't dream it. How did it form that you guys were like, let's create this. Let's make something that's better than everything else out there. Let's go for it. Let's do it, and let's do it together.
Yeah, so what brought us together was a lot of commiserating and complaining about all the archery products out there that we always have to tune or tweak. You buy something and it's not quite right. You got to, cut this off, shave this off, tighten that up, super glue this. And they just failed after, a lot of shots. And I'm here to tell you, Tim, he pumps a lot of rounds through his bow. So if you ever talk to any of his colleagues, the pros, they'll say, if there's one person that can break something, it's Tim. And designing this rest with Tim, I can tell you, he's broke damn near everything on it in the prototype stages. And right now I think he's done. He can't break it. So but it really came out of that. We just, we had our ideas. I had my own approach or my own experiences, I'll say it that way, with the arrow rests I've hunted with over the years, Sean as well, and Tim. Tim had the vision to say, if we made something or designed something that was absolutely bomb-proof, took all the slop out of it, the screws didn't work loose, you can configure it multiple ways. He said that, that A would help him be more competitive, more consistent. And if you look, his track record's actually been more consistent over the last probably 3 to 4 years, generally speaking. And so, we just set off. We just pushed off from the dock and got in our boat, and we just started paddling to where we thought we needed to go with this product. And, what's nice is we don't have this delusional vision of grandeur. We just want to make the best quality archery products that actually have tangible results when you use it.
And where is that boat going for you guys now? Where is the Hamsky company? How's it going for you?
Yeah. We're a small company. I think everyone gets that, but we've been growing every year we've been in business. We've been growing. So that's good. We just bought our first CNC machine and we're cutting chips with that. That's been a big learning curve for us. We're biting off one step at a time. I know other companies have rooms full of these things, but, Rome wasn't built in a day. And a lot of these companies, they've been around a long, long time. So We talked to Brian Hamm at HHA. He's the owner of HHA Sites as an example. You know, you guys have been in business 30 years, and you look at him today, you know, pushing 30 years, looking at him today, you're like, wow, you know, he's very successful, makes great products. Well, yeah, he started in his garage as a machinist too. So, you know, things, good things take time. And we're not in a big hurry. We just want to make sure we do it right.
I my personal experience, so I don't actually own the rest, but I did borrow one once. And what had happened is during some train to hunt training, I had broken my rest. And I had this shoot coming up where they invite the guys who finished in the you had to finish in like the top three or five at one of the shoots during the year at the local archery range here to get invited to the shoot off. And I didn't have a rest, so I borrowed my buddy Jimmy's, whose CBE site I'm currently borrowing as well. And he's like, here, take this. And so I was like, all right. And it was the, what's it called? The dovetail, where it's just a single stationary metal piece.
Yeah, it's called the, we just call it a blade or lizard tongue. So yeah, just blade.
Just a blade. All right, so it's got a blade on it. I've never shot a blade. I pull it back, arrow falls off. Pull it back, arrow falls off. After about 50, 60 times, I'd gotten it to where it stayed, right? So I go and I'm shooting against these guys, and it's all one class. And they all have open, you know, their open gear and whatnot, you know, the long stabilizer scopes. And I'm shooting with the same exact shoot-up I shoot for Train to Hunt, except for, of course, the new rest. And I'm standing there next to a guy, and he looks over and he goes, hey, is that one of the Hamsky rests? And I was like, yeah, it is. He goes, I didn't know you had that. And I'm like, yeah, I just got it yesterday. He's like, those are the best rests that they ever made. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm a pretty big deal these days. Meanwhile, I go up, pull back, arrow falls off.
Yeah,
but I got it. I ended up finishing third. It was a rough third, yeah. But it went okay.
Yeah, the versatility of the rest there is, sounds like that person had it set up as a, just a pure target blade rest. But the beauty of the Versa rest, i.e. the name Versa, versatility, is when you set it up as limb actuated, and a lot of the top 3D shooters are starting to do this, and obviously for hunting as well. But if you get nervous or it's windy, you use the limb actuated mode. And it actually lifts your arrow up. You can have that little arrow trough, and it doesn't matter how hard the wind's blowing, man. You can shoot right off a blade with it, which is pretty awesome.
See, that's obviously what I should have been doing.
Maybe you would have got first.
I don't know about that, but I would have felt a little more confidence and not like such an asshole going up there and having my arrow fall off the rest 3-4 times before I shot. But hey, you learn, right?
That's right, man. If you're not learning, then you're not doing nothing.
Yeah.
So Andrew, tell us a little bit how long it took to develop that rest and like the third axis leveling devices you guys have come out with. You know, you say you want stuff to come out right, and I believe it because same thing with me. I started excelling once I eliminated errors in my setup, and a lot of that comes down to the rest. So, but just tell us a little bit about how long it took to develop some of those products, and other than Tim, you know, cycling them. Of course, you and Sean were shooting them as well. But elaborate a little bit more on that.
Well, what was the question again?
How long did it take?
Sorry, I'm old. For those folks in the audience, I'm the old guy, and these are the young guys. Okay. So how long did it take to develop the rest? Well, you know, it took us about two years of just straight development design and two rounds of prototypes, which doesn't sound like much, but when you're starting off, you try to get it right as close as you can. And a guy like Tim Gillingham, you got to have a pretty thick skin. I came out with the first design. I was all proud of myself. You know, I'm like, yeah, check this out. This is awesome. And he said, that's a piece of beep, you know? And I was like, what? been killing myself, staying up nights, you know, weekends, you know. I measure everything I design in beer. So I'll be like, well, that took me like 4 cases to design that. That one took me about 6-pack to design that. So this one took a lot. I was truckload is how I describe it. And, you know, one thing you got to get the best product when you're working with a really high energy, a very meticulous person too. Despite what Tim's bow looks like or what his bow case looks like, he is a very meticulous person as relative to his equipment performing. So if you scrape off the message, the delivery of the message, and you just get down to it, you know, and you can withstand that for a couple years of development, you'll actually come out the other end of that with a pretty kick-ass rest. And that's basically what happened. It took us 2 years.
So it sounds a little bit like you did all the work and Tim just got to shoot it.
No. This is not about, this is not about me. You know, you need 3 legs of the stool. Everybody's got to listen to this one. 3 legs of the stool. You got to have the crazy wild eye, right, thinker, guy that's way out of bounds, always pushing the envelope of designs and concepts. You need the person that actually can translate that into something tangible. That would be me. So you know who the first person is. That's Tim.
Yeah.
Then you need a guy like Sean, right, the third leg of the stool, so you can deliver on that design, you know, production-wise, time after time, the ops person. So you can have 2 of those legs of the stool, and you won't be successful because you won't have what it takes to keep coming out with product and then keep the product in the hands of the people that actually benefit from it the most. So all 3 of us do our jobs very well. Tim, you know, I just got to say, Tim's not part of our company. He did help us found it, but we still use him as a resource, as a testing resource. Hey, Tim, can you break this today kind of deal? So, but the 3 of us work very well together, and I think that's a pretty special deal too.
So is this your full-time job or part-time?
This is my part-time job. You know, a little bit embarrassed to say that, I guess, because I'd really love for it to be my full-time job. Of all things, I'm an electrical engineer during the day and a mechanical engineer at night for Hamsky. But it keeps me busy, keeps me energized, and I'm always thinking about what I need to design next, what problem, what solution I'm going to bring to the table next. What Hamsky's going to bring to the table next, and you guys might be surprised on what's on the horizon.
What's that?
So, Andrew, when you're coming out with the site, just tell me. I of all things, man.
What's that mean?
I'm just predicting because here, you know, you talked before about the having to shave stuff off and glue stuff and fix stuff. Have you seen the sites that I run lately?
Yes.
Because I tell you what, I have put shit together from 2 different manufacturers, sometimes 3 manufacturers, to try to get stuff right because there's some good stuff out there, but there's always flaws. And I know that when you guys come out with the site, I'm just assuming, right? I'm not and we're having to share a mic here, so sorry, we're kind of fighting over the mic. If you're – Will, are you recording this?
Yeah, I'm recording everything. Okay.
So we're like –
You got to get on that thing.
over, like, I won't tell you what, like a piece of meat. But, no, I'm assuming it's a site. If you guys are, I know you'd probably be working on one eventually if you haven't already started to, because of all the stuff on the market right now, there's not at all a site.
Well, obviously, I can't comment on the details of projects we're working on right now. That's, you know, intergalactic kung fu secret. But I hear what you're saying, Brother Phil. You're not the first person that's come to us, approached us with the, would you get off your, you know, rear end and design a site? I'll say this. I've looked at site designs. I have multiple sites like you on my bows, hunting bows and target bows. And there ain't a site out there that I don't want to tweak. We'll just leave it at that.
So if, say, it was just the 3 of us hanging out, you know, let's just say it is, how about you just tell, you know, just Phil and I aren't going to tell a soul?
So if it's just three of us hanging out, the first thing I do is have you guys sign a couple NDAs, and then we can break bread, brother. But until then, I just got to keep it on the DL.
Well, let me throw this out there. If at any point you need help with somebody else cycling a product a little bit more, then you know where to find us. And I would be glad to go shoot a bow in a cave somewhere where nobody would see me with that sight on there. But anyway, I'm looking forward to the future products of Hamsky, because I use just about everything they have right now and am happy with everything. So here's a plug for Hamsky. If you know, we haven't already dropped enough, just try it. I mean, I like I said, you're gonna eliminate flaws in your current setup, I guarantee it, by going to a VersaRest, you know, leveling your sight with the third axis level. You want to get better. It starts with the best equipment and setting it up properly. So,
yeah, I mean, we're here to talk more about bow hunting than anything else. And I would just want to say that, you know, Tim, Sean, and myself, we all start off as bow hunters. I mean, most of the people in archery, that's how they started off. They start off hunting, whether it's small game or, you know, upland bird game. They're just in the field or in the outdoors. And I'll just tell you my personal experience with bow hunting. I grew up in southern Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, when I was a kid, where tree stands were basically, you drove the farm truck full of scrap wood to the corner of the field and you nailed your tree stand in the trees is what you did. You had to find a tree that had the three, you know, three trunks growing out of one base so you could make a triangle tree stand. And then you hope after a really windy storm that the thing was still in the tree when you got there. So, but through those experiences, you know, over my travels and going to school and getting a job in California, I ended up in Arizona and I really got back into bow hunting. And, I'm here to tell you, when you step out in the desert in Arizona with a bow, you feel wildly under-weaponed, is how I would say it. And I walked around for my first year. I might have got close to a lizard, I think. That's about it. But I'm here to tell you, the guys and gals that are successful year after year, no matter what state you live in, on public land, that's the other thing I really started appreciating, was the public land successful folks are the ones that have got something going on. Those are the folks to learn from. So my success rate started going up when I was hunting in the desert, when I basically really started to understand how my bow operated, what arrows, what broadheads, what releases tuned the best, and just to absolutely maximize my accuracy. Yeah, there's a guy, you always hear the story of someone sits out on a mound, right, in the foothills, and a car truck drives by, and a big deer jumps up and runs over to him, and he shoots it at 15 yards, true story in Arizona, 200-inch buck, make you sick. But that never happens to me, man. So I'm just, you know, I'm going to sit on a hill and next to the freeway, hope a car jumps a deer, but that's never going to happen, so... You know, just making sure that you are in tune with your equipment and eliminating all the errors in your equipment is when I started to see, you know, more success in the field.
That's really true, and that's something I'm learning as a, you know, fairly newer person to the archery game than, say, you or Phil. And I always tell my coach, listen, I'm a driver. I'm not a mechanic. You just give it to me good to go, and I'll take, you know, I'm ready. But, you know, he says, no. It's time to start learning how to work on this thing and why everything works the way it does. And that has translated to more success in the 3D archery courses, because I know if, you know, I'm breaking right, breaking left, or if something's just a little bit off or there's a little bit of rattle, I know now what to look for and how to fix it, mostly.
Yeah, and I can't emphasize that point enough, and it sounds like Drill Sergeant Phil's got it right again. But, you know, last year I went to Kodiak Island with Tim and a couple buddies, and when you're in a very remote location, whether it's, you know, 2 hours outside of Denver or 2 days in some wilderness area like that, if you don't know how your equipment works and you run into stumble into a problem, you're kind of screwed. So I implore every bow hunter and every person out there with a bow to
tell us a little bit more about that, because you've been able to take some pretty awesome tags into the field the last couple of years and be successful. And I know this is something Will wanted to talk about, so we'll go ahead and
hold on. Kinda, what I right after he said, I implore every hunter, the connection got real crappy. I missed everything he said. So I'm worried people are going to be listening to it and then be all of a sudden like, what? What happened? Why's Will talking now?
All I said is I implore every archer, every hunter to be in tune with your equipment. Because if you're on the side of a mountain or, you know, at the long end of a field, you drop your bow, and it's the difference between continuing your hunt or, in some cases, stomping off a four-hour march to get to a truck, to get to a pro shop, to ruin 2 days of your hunt, to get your stuff set back up. So knowing how your equipment works, being familiar with it, is a valuable, valuable asset.
All right. Go ahead, Phil.
I want to know about hunting.
Yes, yes. Let's talk hunting. I think we've already pretty much covered how Hamskay, greatest rest in the world. If you haven't tried one, do. You know, we obviously did not have Andrew on here just to pump up the product. It's something that, you know, Phil obviously strongly believes in because he shoots one. And I, you know, through experience and learning from people better than me, have come to believe that something like that makes a total difference in your setup. But anyways, hunting, Andrew, what's the quest? I talked to you a little bit about this via, you know, Facebook Messenger, but what is your current hunting quest you are on?
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit, and we'll get to that. When I met Sean, actually, Sean is probably the most accomplished bow hunter of the three of us, I would say. Guys, he came up to me. He wasn't bragging or nothing. And he just matter-of-factly said, you know, we were chatting one day. He's like, yeah, I'm actually got the Big 8 in Colorado. And I'm thinking, well, what's that? I mean, I know what the Big 8 is. That's the University of Nebraska, right? That was back when there was the Big 8. But and I didn't really appreciate what Sean had accomplished, and his friend Toby DeLamonte he finished the Big 8 in Colorado. He is the youngest guy to finish the Big 8. And just so people know, there are 10 big game species that live in Colorado. And hopefully I count them all here. There's the bighorn, there's the Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep. There's the desert bighorn sheep. There's the pronghorn. There's the mountain goat. There's the bear, right? Black bear. We have the elk. We have whitetail and mule deer. We have mountain lion. What else am I missing, Phil? And moose. So that's the 10. Okay. So, the Big 8 is, all of them except for the desert sheep and the Shiras moose, right? And just to let folks know, Colorado, I think, is the, probably the only state that has 10. I have to do a fact check on that. But for instance, you know, if you go, well, Wyoming's got all that stuff. Well, the Wyoming doesn't have the desert bighorn sheep, right? Well, Nevada has a bighorn sheep, both kinds, right? Yeah, that's true. But they don't have white-tailed deer. So when you kind of go around the horn, Colorado is kind of the place where, if you're going to put your stake in the ground as a bow hunter, this is probably, you know, the marquee state to do it in. So talking to Sean, I was just thinking, oh, that's great. You know, I just like hunting. I just want to get out and get after it. So what changed for me, the quest, to answer your question, Will, is I drew a Shiras moose tag in 2013. And Sean's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. Well, he didn't say that, but he, you know, he couldn't believe I drew that tag. And if anyone's familiar with how long it takes to draw the Chivas Moose tag in Colorado, Sean's been waiting, I think, 26 years, and he hasn't had a tag. Okay, I mean, that's what it's like to live in the western states and try to draw some of these tags. It can be absolutely brutal. So when I drew the tag, I think Sean up slash my tires or hugged me. I'm not quite sure. I think he picked the latter, so I came out of that one all right. But Sean said, hey, man, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. The other thing about a Chivas Moose tag in Colorado is if you kill a bull moose, you're done for your life. You can never hunt them again unless you buy the governor's tag, which you probably can't afford. I can't afford. So it's pretty much a one-and-out deal. It's a very special tag. You pretty much want to drop every other tag you got unless you got a desert bighorn sheep tag somewhere, and you just want to get after it. So I actually was successful, and that was pretty exciting for me. I shot a really nice Boone and Crockett moose. Some folks have seen the show. It'll be on the Full Draw film tour this year, so if folks can get out and see that, they'll see Sean and I running around chasing moose. But I also killed a black bear that year, and I've been trying to do spot and stock black bear for, well, ever since I lived in Arizona. Got close, but just never could close a deal. And that's another very challenging animal. If people don't understand what it's like to grab your bow, grab your binoculars, your pack, and go find a black bear to shoot. This is not an easy task. It's not like there's, hey, there's 30 on the side of that hill. Check it out. You know, it's like, I see a bush moving. Oh, it's not moving anymore. Damn. Right? And where they live is, it's hell. It's just hell where they live in many parts of Colorado. So, yeah, you can't bait. You can't use dogs here in Colorado. So I managed to kill a bear spot and stock. Well, see, let me see what else I got here. And it turns out I have five of the big eight and six of the big nine, which would be the Chivas. And the desert bighorn sheep tag, you might as well, you know, that's a really scarce deal. So there's only two people in Colorado that have actually killed all 10 with a bow, only two on record. So that's a pretty impressive feat, and really comes down to drawing those tags. So my quest, Will Bradley, sir, is, yep, right, to finish it off. And so what I got left is I got a mountain goat. So I got 11 points there, mountain lion. And of all things, now the guys in the East Coast, you guys are going to laugh at me, but white-tailed deer.
How does that happen?
Well, in Colorado, you got to draw for a white-tail tag. It's not like, you know, there's – you know, they're not like pests. They're not like ticks back, you know, back east.
Forest rats out here.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Exactly. Range maggots. Call them what you want, right? But out here, you got to draw for it. And the public land on where the whitetail live is pretty scarce. There's just not a lot of it. And again, I got to tip my hat to Sean. He killed a monster whitetail. I think it was 3 years ago, Phil. And went 196 gross, not typical, on public land. So, you know, you're talking to me, but I'm telling you, Sean is, he's got some, he's quite the bow hunter, too.
All right, Phil, you heard the man. End the episode. We got the wrong guy. Call Sean up.
Hey, so, you know, I'm a big Hamsky supporter, and Andrew's a good friend of mine. Sean's a good friend of mine. I get along with Tim great. I tell you what, we've had a couple experiences where we've all been at a dinner table together, and there is not a dull moment. My gut hurts from the start of it to the end of it. When we get a chance to put it together, we will, because that'll be worth it. That'll be – I get the fly on the wall comment with the three of these guys together, because like Andrew said, they've been buddies for years. So they have the relationships of – now working and being friends and the experiences. So that's one for the future. We definitely got to ring up.
Yeah, I think we can make that happen.
Hey, maybe we could even get Tim on it, make it a fivesome.
Definitely. You need the hammer here. He's the color. We'll call him the color man. I'm telling you what, the people, I don't know what you good or bad, what you've heard about Tim, but that guy's heart is in the right spot. He is genuinely cares about archery and wants the best for archery. And he's one of the guys, one of the few pros that that you can actually just walk up to at any tournament. He makes himself available, and you can talk to him about anything, fly fishing. I don't know if you got to see that guy fly fish. It's pretty funny. Anyway, love you, brother. But yeah, he's very accessible, and he'll tell you anything you want to know. And I encourage people to approach Sean. Sean, same way. You'll see him at the tournaments. Tim or myself, you catch us, just stop us and ask us a question.
Are we going to see you guys at Train to Hunt again this year?
You know, it sounds like a cop-out, but I was training pretty hard in December and January. And I had something happen with my sciatic nerve, and I couldn't even jog for 3 months. So I just started getting back into it. It's going to be a game time decision for me. I competed last year. I really enjoyed that. And for folks that are out in cyberland right now, if you want to know exactly where your preparation is for hunting, I don't care where you live, you need to go do Train to Hunt, because that's a gut check, and you'll go home and say, I need to work on some stuff. And you quickly figure out where you need to shore up your loose ends.
You and Sean both competed, right?
Yeah, Sean actually finished on the podium. The old fart beat me. I can't believe it.
You know? Dude, you gotta come back. You gotta compete. Yeah. Is he gonna do it?
I don't know, but you know, if Sean's listening right now, we're gonna shame him into having to go and do it, because he needs a break from his from his day to day grind, and get him out there. He's a fierce competitor, no matter what he does, and it'd be really good to have him back out there.
Yeah, Sean's a workaholic. We all know that, and not that none of us, you know, that the rest of us don't work hard, but Sean, if you're listening, man, we hope to see you at Train to Hunt. If not, you know, I got to shoot with Sean. 2 weeks ago we had an RMA shoot. Yeah. And he came out and put the whooping on all of us like he knows how. But Sean's a top-notch, you know, shooter, shoots the 3D circuit. Like Andrew said, very accomplished bow hunter. Leg 2 of 3 from the Hamsky organization, Hamsky Enterprises. But we'll talk to Sean. At some point we'll pin him down, if nothing else, for a phone call and get him on the line too. But Sean's a real, real good guy too.
So if you had to make a guess, scale of 1 to 10, what do you think the chances are of getting Tim out for a Train to Hunt event?
You know, Tim actually did a Train to Hunt event. I think it was Bowcast at the Bird. And, he actually, little known factoid here, he actually shaped, talked to Kenton, and he actually shaped what Train to Hunt is now. And what I mean by that is when Tim did it, there was more emphasis on the physical part of it and the the running and the endurance end, and not so much the shooting end. And Tim went out and broke all the targets. I think they shot clay targets or clay pigeons. And he didn't have the fastest time, but he was the only guy to break every target. So, and he wasn't, he thought that, there should be more emphasis put on the shooting part of it. Because as we all know, the average success rate in a stock is a little less than 10%. So, if you're out there and you see a Pope and Young mule deer, right, you have to see on average 10 Pope and Young mule deer to get one opportunity, of which you might miss at that point. So the endurance is definitely a big part of it, but at the end of the day, you got to close the deal. So shooting under those stressful conditions, it has been adjusted accordingly. I think Ken's done a nice job with that and put a little more emphasis on that, even the playing field out, changed the curriculum of Train to Hunt. So it is a real nice combination of the endurance, the physical end of it, and then the mental part to include shooting.
Thank you, Tim.
Here's an idea. You obviously heard earlier I'm going team with Matt this year. How about putting together a super squad, dream team, if you will, Pippen and Jordan-esque type situation, Hamsky team with you and Tim, because you guys probably won't beat Sean, but maybe together, you can get something going.
You know, well, Tim is he's a busy man. This year is probably a little too short a notice, but I can definitely bend his ear at a dinner party in my future. Yeah, Utah, maybe we could all jam out there and, you know, just make it a group thing. And, yeah, that's definitely something we can work on. Will, I'll take that for action.
Well, Phil, do you know when the last event is?
I believe it's either Casper, Oregon, middle of July. But Tim's, I think the next 2 months, I bet you Tim's shooting 8 or 9 tournaments in the next 2 months.
Oh, come on. How much fun can those tournaments be?
Well, I'm going to side with Tim on this one, where if he can go out there and make 10 to 20 grand on a tournament, I think I know where he's going to be.
Yeah, I did an interview with Tim years ago, and I said, so what do you like about archery best? And he paused, and he said, big checks.
So you're saying alluring him with lots of camaraderie and dick jokes won't exactly win him over to coming through?
Yeah, a lot of jocularity, sweaty pits, rolling into gravel. Yeah.
Well, they are going Utah next year. That could be the year of you guys.
Yeah, I'll shame him into going. I got a little leverage on the big guy.
There you go. See, I'm telling you, that team division is going to light up this year or next year, whatever.
Yeah. What did you tell Matt exactly? I mean, now don't get me wrong, Will. I know you're a fierce competitor, and I ran with Matt last year nationals, and the dude doesn't. He's like an Energizer bunny that don't stop. So, what exactly did that conversation entail? Because maybe Andrew can take some pointers, just in case he needs that over the top finish with Tim.
I'm gonna tell you if many women have fallen, you know, to the silver tongue devil of Will Bradley. Well, I'm gonna lay it on you right now what I said to Matt. I said this. Hey, when's regionals? How's training going? And he told me, and I said, how's training going? He's like, it's going good. Haven't been shooting as much as I'd like to. And I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean. It's busy. So you wanna go team? Yep. Just like that. That's how you do it.
That's funny.
I don't know. I know I was inspired a lot by seeing Brock and Tyler and how much fun they had in Arizona. And honestly, I was just at a point with my training where it's just like, I'm alone so damn much all the time with it that to go out for, you know, 2 weekends that I'm traveling and then not really talk to anybody most of the days, just I wasn't that excited about it. And Matt was kind of on the same page where he thought the same thing. And, you know, so we were really both inspired by the whole, you know, teamwork thing. And he's got the team thing going on in CrossFit. And, you know, you think about it, Matt placed, what, fourth last year? Yeah. You know, I think he was leading going into the second day, and Brock ended up finishing second. So it's not, I mean, it's getting to be, you know, a tight, really competitive field. So I'm kind of getting excited about it. I think a lot of guys have kind of passed it up as a second, you know, a second class field. But right now, it's not looking too second class. Of course, have the big sexy there, but hey.
Well, I'm going to dabble. I maybe next year, but I, that's definitely something I've thought about as well. I mean, you go out with your buddies, and if it's nothing else, we plan our hunting season, and we get to spend, you know, 3 to 5 days, or maybe if you're lucky, a couple times like that out in the field with your friends and leaning on each other and depending on each other. And to do that in a competition format where you're still shooting your bow and working out, I think that's where it's at too. Well, I definitely think the team event is going to be the one that grows leaps and bounds with Train to Hunt, and I think that's something we all going to participate a little bit more in the future.
And then, as you guys know, I'm not a big time Western hunter, and we just had, you know, the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Snyder on last week, and the one thing you probably heard him talk about a lot, as did I, was, you know, how many people he goes out there with. You know, he's not going out there solo a ton. He's going out there, you know, with one guy, two guys, three guys, whatever, you know, and he even said for his dream competition, it'd be a 4-man team. And, you know, I think there's, if we were going out and winning, you know, $20,000, $30,000 in a solo event, yeah, that might change, you know, my perspective a little. But as it stands, I want to go out and, you know, have fun, enjoy it as much as I can. And I think doing it with Matt this year, it's really just re-energized my training and focus. And he said the same thing for him. The moment we decided to go team, it was like game on, you know. Everything's different now. You got a guy you definitely don't want to let down. You don't want to be the weak link. So it's been pretty cool. So, you know, and if, hey, we can bring back, you know, 2 gold medals to the Natural Born Hunter podcast, there's nothing wrong with that. It's, you know, it's not going to be easy for anybody, but hey, you got to try.
Yeah, I'm friends with you guys on Facebook, and, you know, I'm always impressed when you guys are lifting, you know, Volkswagens over your head and deadlifting, you know, Chevy Suburbans. I'm just like, holy shit, are you kidding me?
That's Will. Will, what was it? A couple of episodes ago, we had Ryan on, and he threw a workout out, and he said, you want to crush your legs, do this, right? Throw 135 pounds or get 135-pound barbell and do lunges as many reps as you can for 20 minutes. And, I lift more kind of high reps. So I was like, I'll do that. I'll do that workout. And I did what I felt was pretty good. I definitely afterwards felt I can improve on it. So I tell Will, I said, Will, I got 162, man. How was that? He's like, well, that's all right. That's pretty good. Well, then I see the post like 2 days later that Will smashed it with 212 reps in 20 minutes. So, you know, these guys, Ryan and Will and a lot of these other CrossFit guys, you know, Josh and Matt, yeah, that's a different element altogether. So when I get to put down my moose eventually, I think I know who I'm going to call to help me carry that sucker out.
Ryan, call Ryan. He's much stronger than I am. You know what, though? It's a funny thing. I tell people, it's like, yeah, you could, you know, they ask me about training for this. It's like, yeah, you could do CrossFit, but, you know, it might not help you win the events. You should call up Mendoza, find out his secret training methods, because so far that seems to work pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, I joked earlier about, you know, you guys are the kids and I'm the old fart, which is true. But, you know, for me, I kind of rearrange the weights a little bit, you know, three to four times a week. And I do my jog around the block, which is about 3.5 miles. I do that about 3 times a week. And my hip's feeling a little bit better. My back is. So I threw a 50-pound sandbag in my Spike Camp Kafaru bag, strapped it on. I took a lap around the block, 3.5 miles, and I'm here to tell you, you can go jogging all day long. You can feel really good about yourself, feeling all big, sexy, and then up. But when you put some weight on it, just 50 pounds for 5 miles, your body hurting. It's just another reminder of you can't train often enough, right? You can't train hard enough to prepare yourself for, I'll say it this way, any kind of hunting. I don't care if it's West Coast, East Coast. If you go to Alaska and you get out there, or you get up Northwest Territories, or, you know, you drive bomb owl all the way out here to Colorado in a DIY Colorado elk hunt, OTC, make sure you're out there, you know, exercising yourself and getting yourself ready, because hunting season is around the corner, boys.
So what kind of training, when you were training for Train to Hunt, what were you doing, Andrew?
So I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Let's just face it, right? Just Train to Hunt thing, and I forgot who was shaming me into doing it. I think it was Trevin Stolzfitz from Outback Outdoors. Yeah, he was kind of going, you guys got to do it. I know he shamed Sean into it, and so I was just kind of playing around. I said, okay, I'm going to do it. So I think someone dared me on Facebook, so I said to hell with it. And I'm not, you guys eat, you know, fetal pigs for breakfast and all that. You guys are animals. But I basically set up a course. I went online. You know, I said, what is the curriculum? What do I got to do? So I got, you know, I own some 3D targets. I live in a, you know, a neighborhood where I can shoot long range and do all that stuff. And I'm here to tell you, I felt pretty damn good when I actually finished the curriculum and wasn't gasping for air. You know, I thought, oh, I'm in pretty good shape. This ought to be pretty straightforward. And I was doing the sandbag lift, and I had I set up a belly crawl thing in my yard, and I grabbed and pulled back my bow, and I'm like, what the beep is that? I can't hit nothing. I was like snap shooting at it. It was like I was shooting pheasants. It was crazy, man. So I quickly learned the curriculum for me at the time was, because, you know, you just don't know till you go. And if you want, that's one of my favorite sayings, by the way, in bow hunting. You don't know till you go. But, you know, if you can set up, if you've never done train to hunt, I would highly recommend that you go online, go to their website, look at the curriculum. Kenton does a great job of telling you what, you know, what the box step up it's going to be. The over and under the pole, the sandbag lift, right, the burpees, and just get that list and just try to do it. That's all I got to say. And grab your bow, set a target up at 40 yards, right, and run to that damn target with your bow and fire an arrow. And you'll be like, yeah, I need a little work.
You always feel like a great shooter until your heart rate's jacked out of your mind.
Well, that's the other thing, right? I mean, all of these things, whether it's you go shoot 3Ds competitively, you stand on the line in Vegas and just shoot spots, you do train to hunt, all of these things just make you better, make you more successful when a moment of truth comes, when you're looking at that once-in-a-lifetime, you know, shot at a moose, a bighorn sheep. Phil's got a sheep tag. You know, we'll ask Phil. I'll flip it right here. I'm gonna interview Phil, aka Big Sexy. I'll be like, all right, brother. So you just drew your sheep tag, right, in a unit that's got some bomber sheep. Why are you doing train to hunt this year or for any year?
To kill a big sheep. I mean, you know, I thought about it when I finally drew the tag. And it's like, okay, I've got 10 weeks till the season starts. And I thought about all the guys out there that draw a tag like this that don't start their preparation until they get a tag in their hand. And that's where it really came from. The trend for over a year and a half. And now I'm going into my second year. So I couldn't be more confident going into a hunt like this that I'm ready for it, because I've been training at a high level for these kind of events. So, you know, training for train to hunt, training for a sheep hunt, to me, there's no change. It's just, it's training, you know, it's really getting ready for it. So that's it, man. I mean, I feel blessed to be able to get that tag, but even more so that I feel like I'm ready for that tag. So.
All right. Well said. And on that note, let's take a break and we will be right back with our questions for Andrew.
Job is to break what it is. I have my words, both my fists, all my blood. I bleed for this. Until I'm covered with gold, but I know it's all built for now.
All right, all right, all right. And we are back. So, one of the questions we got asked, Andrew, was when you are sighting in, right, and you're going from broadheads to field points, is that, am I saying that right? Am I messing that up?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. When you're going back and forth from one to the other, somebody asked, how do you move your rest to sight it in to keep them the same?
Well, what's great about any rest, hopefully, is you can move it. But what I like to do is get my field points and my broadheads hitting in the same spot and not having to move my rest. And the reason for that is not everyone has a bow or multiple bows that, you know, there's just set up for field points. And the exact same, they got another bow that's just set up for broadheads. I'm like a lot of folks, I like to have one bow that I shoot a lot, and I shoot field points and broadheads out of it. So what I will do, instead of moving my, like if I want to say I'm going to go shoot a tournament this weekend with my hunting bow, oh, I got to move my, you know, move my rest because I got field points on there, right? But it's my main hunting bow, and I want to put a lot of stick time on it because I want to make sure I'm comfortable with how it shoots and all that. And then when I go to my broadheads, oh, I got to move my rest. Not every setup will you be able to have your field points and your broadheads hit in the same spot. And that's where you need to have a sight that you can actually move. It's much easier to move a sight, more repeatable to move a sight if you have to move it, I would say, four clicks to the left, because your broadheads group really well, but they just seem to hit to the left compared to your field points. Generally, you don't want to move your rest. You want to, how I set it up is I group tune. So I'll shoot through paper. I'll get a bullet hole. That's where I will start. It's not where I end. A lot of people put a lot of energy into paper tuning. There's a lot of different approaches and philosophies. That could be a whole show in itself. But at the end of the day, I want my arrows to hit in the same spot. So I grooming, which might seem counterintuitive. And then I'll move my rest around until I get the absolute best groups to tune with my broadheads. And then I'll move my sight there. And that's my hunting rig, and I'll just practice with that. If I do use broad or field points, they will fly different. This might sound technical, but the coefficient of drag on the broadhead itself is higher than a field point. And what that means is that at longer ranges, right, your drag coefficient's higher. It's going to actually lose speed faster, which means your impact point's going to be lower on the broadhead than your field points, generally speaking. You won't notice that at 20 yards, but if you shoot longer range, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards, you'll see it. If you shoot 100 yards, you'll see it. So have a movable sight. Make sure you got your third axis set right. Do group tuning, because that's, you know, where it's at, my opinion. And make sure that I'll tell you another story. I'm going off on a bender here, but I think I've earned the right.
Phil says, go right ahead.
Right. So one day, I'll tell you my hunt story. I'm out there, and my good friend of mine, Jeremy Munoz, and I, we hunt together, and we go turkey hunting. And I got a new bow. And I'm like, all right, I got a new bow. I got to get it ready and go turkey hunting. All I got to do is shoot 40 yards, right, for turkeys. I mean, that's about max range. So I get my old hunting arrows that are just shooting great, gold tip 55, 75s, right, hunters. And I go out there, and I cannot hit the block target. I barely can keep all my arrows on a block target at 40 yards. And I'm thinking, what in the world? I'm rusty. That's it. That's what it is. So I played around, and I couldn't figure it out. I was really getting frustrated. And I said, you know what? I wonder if my arrow spine isn't quite right. So I went rummaging around in the bin. I call it the bin, arrow bin. Everyone's got one of those. And I found some 75, 95s that I had in there uncut. So I made six of those babies up, screwed in my broadheads. And my group was right there. You know, it was, tennis ball, a little bit bigger than tennis ball size at 40 yards. And I'm thinking, what in the world? Changed nothing on my bow, changed nothing on the broadheads. I changed the spine of my arrow. And the group went from I couldn't hit it, literally broadside of a barn, to, oh, my God, I'm stroking it, right? And that's And that's what's so important about you just can't pick up your equipment, get a new bow, and go, oh, this bow sucks. People have to understand that your hunting bow is a system, and it all has to work together in harmony and unison. So moving the rest, I don't recommend that. Getting a sight that you can move is much easier, and making sure that you know what is the best setup for you and what makes it work for you. That's key.
Now, if say, I don't know, you were to make the perfect sight for, to complement your rest, what would that look like?
Well, I'm just saying.
But okay? If you were.
Let's just go on the record. Okay, I'm not saying, I'm just saying. Well, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give any of the existing sight companies any ideas. Okay, let's just start there.
Hypothetically, we'll say.
Let me say this. There's actually a lot of good rests out there. Sights out there. But again, there's always a better mousetrap. I don't care what anyone says. So for me, it's got to be bomb proof, number one, right? It's just like our rest. You got to be able to, short of taking a digger with it off a horse where all your weight lands on it, it's got to be very robust. Number two, it has to be pretty straightforward to set up. Okay, what I mean by that is the adjustments on it have to be user-friendly. Nothing worse. I don't know how many times I've done this and wanted to throw the thing in the trash, but you get your pin, right? You got that little 440 screw in your pin sight, and you get it right where you want it, and you go turn it down, and it moves. And you're like, oh, crap, and you shoot your arrows. You're like, damn, I'm 2 yards hot now. Shit, right? And you back it off, and you're always jacking with that. So I know other people have other ways to do it with some, threaded screws and whatnot, but that's what I mean by, I'll say easy setup. And then I have a background in aerospace, so if it's light in those other attributes, that's the best of all worlds, because I'm here to tell you, I don't mind carrying a 4.4-pound base bow around with all the stuff on it, but after 8 days of that, my left arm's longer than my right arm. So, and as I get older, right, it's kind of like, It's the progression of, someone's backpack, right? You're always culling stuff out of there to make it lighter so you don't have to carry weight. And all those things come into play the longer and longer you hunt. So those are some of the things I'm just saying that I might be looking at if I were shopping for a new site.
All right. That's the same thing I'd be looking for. All right, one more question. Somebody actually wanted us to ask you, I guess, just to talk about third axis leveling a little bit and the importance of it.
So, yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about the rest and, it has zero play in it and all those kinds of things. But when you do the math, what it comes down to is that your third axis is probably the largest contributor to missing, not being as accurate as you could be, and people don't even know it. And the community that needs to know it the most or appreciate it the most and figure out how to adjust for it is actually bow hunters. I'll start with this observation I made. I don't watch many hunting shows because I don't have a food plot, but I was watching So I'm watching a well-known bow hunter that makes his living with a group of guys on TV, and he's on a mountain goat hunt, and I forgot where he was. Maybe he was even in Colorado, and he gets one shot. This is on national TV. He gets one shot at a mountain goat in obviously steep country. It's 70 yards. Okay. He shoots and his arrow and the goat, the billy is kind of facing quartering away, perfect, you know, everyone's dream shot, the slight quartering away shot. Billy doesn't even know he's there. He shoots and misses it just right. And just in a little low, right? And he looks back at the camera and he's like, I didn't check my bow. The airline must have bumped it. That's a lesson for you. And I'm sitting on the couch going, nah, you dumbass, you didn't have your third axis set sight right. That's the bottom line. Because, you know, it goes to show you, and I mean, you know, all these folks remain nameless. It just goes to show you that the third axis is important. And, if you go to our catalog, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I'll just tell folks that go to our website. You can go to YouTube and Google Hamsky third axis, and we have all the information there. Third axis is basically moving your sight aperture so it is, I'll say, perpendicular or orthogonal to the line of sight or your arrow's trajectory, if that makes sense. And what happens is when it's not, you get a problem when you shoot uphill and downhill. That is actually, Sean and I had done some testing and how that manifests itself is when you draw your bow back, the bow actually pivots or twists in your hand a little bit. Okay. Now there's a lot of bow companies that have these flex cable guards and all those kinds of things. And that has dramatically reduced the amount of, torque is what we call it, that is put into a bow when you draw it all the way back. But there is still, even with those flex guards, there's still some torque in the bow. It's pretty obvious. You can actually see it. You just screw in a 30-inch stabilizer in your hunting bow, put an arrow in it, draw it back. And if the stabilizer is not in the line with your arrow, that's bow torque. That's third axis problem. And just to give you an example, that gentleman was shooting 70 yards. I got a little chart in our catalog here, and you can go to it. It's a few pages in. There's a chart that says third axis error. So this guy was shooting at 70 yards, and he was, I think, at around a 30-ish degree hill or downhill shot. And this chart in the book actually shows you how much you're going to miss if your bow has 1 degree of torque. Okay, so this guy was shooting a high let off, high poundage, squatty bow, axle to axle. And those bows, when we measured them, were more like 2.5 degrees, 3 degrees of torque. So you would take the number in this catalog. So if you have 1 degree of torque at that 70-yard shot for that mountain goat, he's going to miss by 5 inches. Okay, that's just math. There's no way around it. If your bow has 2 degrees of torque, you multiply that number by 2. It's a linear relationship. So he would miss by 10 inches. He missed by about 10 inches. Just missed the goat, right? Quartering away shot. So the math doesn't lie. Third axis is critical. Where I learned about it was target archery. Where it really pays dividends for me has been in the field bow hunting. So third axis is definitely something you want to make sure you get familiar with. Make sure you actually buy a sight that has that adjustment. And then go whoever you're buying the sight from. This will tell you a lot about your pro shop. Ask them, how do I set it at full draw? And if they don't know, you might want to shop around for a pro shop that actually knows. If you're not comfortable with buying our tool and using it yourself, find a pro shop that does do it. And there are many pro shops out there now that use our tool. But get familiar with it. Go to our website, www.hamskyarchery.com. You do a search on YouTube, and you'll find all the infomercials. And, get in tune with third axis. You're going to need it.
Phil, do you guys do third axis tunes?
We do. It's gotten to the point, Will, where – you know, a lot of customers come in and you start showing them the sites, and we don't even offer that many sites anymore that don't have it because it's just, you know, you really need it. So when a customer comes in and says, oh, I don't need all that fancy stuff, it's like, well, are you planning on hitting when you're aiming at? Because if you are, you might want to consider this. So we do. We set them up, and I've gotten personal instruction from the Big Cheese over here, Big Sexy number one, and also Sean. So No Limits Archery knows how to do third axis tuning.
So in other words, if you're not just going to take perfectly level shots at animals fairly close to you, you may want to check out your third axis.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for the folks that say, well, you know, my shots are pretty limited in yardage and whatnot, the longer the range and the steeper the angle, the worse these things get. And the more torque your bow has in it, the worse these things get. And, you know, if you're a person that is ever dreaming of going anywhere else other than your state to, you know, to hunt, and you're, I don't know the last time I took a shot on flat ground. I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you. I shot my bighorn sheep last December on the side of a hill. You know, it was probably about 45 degrees. Footing wasn't great. One shot killed it. I was pretty excited about that. And all I kept telling myself when I was aiming was, check the bubble, you know. So all these little detail things are important. If you do these things, I'm here to tell you, folks, if you do these things, your success rate will increase.
All right. There it is. All right. So this has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil Big Sexy Mendoza, with our guest from Hamsky Archery, Andrew Munsell. Andrew, where can people check out the stuff? Where can they find you? Where can they harass you and Tim Gillingham to team up and do a Train to Hunt event together?
Obviously, you can find us on the web at www.hamskyarchery.com. You can contact us through our website. We have a contact us, and we'll get your email. If you just want to personally harass Tim, you can find him on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook. You can find Sean on Facebook. But we answer all our customer inquiries. We'll get back to you, and you'll get answers from the owners. I'll say it that way. So me and Sean answer all those. You know, we field all the questions, technical or otherwise. And if you want me to harass Tim, you just let me know.
Yeah, there you go. There it is. All right. And so next week, do you want to do the announcement, Phil? Do you want me to do it? You want to do half? You want to introduce who one of our special two? We're going to be doing a series of podcasts next week. So it'll be two episodes. We will record separately, and we're going to release them at the same time. I think when we Phil tells you in a minute here who and why, you'll understand.
Yeah, so we, you know, Will and I want to be real with all you followers and listeners. You know, we're trying to bring you information and you know, anything we can to help you and better educate you and make you better informed to make your own decisions with companies you decide to spend your money with. And two companies that are big in the bow hunter fitness world, Wilderness Athlete and Mountain Ops. So we've got them both scheduled to be on, again, like Will said, separately. We want to get into the story of what those companies are, what they're all about, what their goals are, you know, doing them from the consumer perspective. We're trying to no BS answers to a lot of the questions that you may be having.
So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Next week we will be having on the founder of Wilderness Athlete, Mark Paulson, and two of the four founders of Mountain Ops, Jordan Harbertson, and his brother. It's good. I think, you know, I'm really, really excited about this. I've been excited about all our podcasts. I think this is going to be another, you know, great couple of podcasts. So if you have questions for them, please send them in to our Facebook page. And we also now have a website up and running, thanks to Phil. So you can check us out at naturalbornhunter.com and naturalbornhunter on Instagram. So for the Natural Born Hunter podcast, thank you for tuning in. Hope you tune into the next ones. Wake up, chase your dreams, repeat.
catch my breath.